You're now tuned in to Cognitive Flow, brought to you by OptimalAnesthesia.com, where clinical insight meets focused clarity. Welcome, everyone. Today, we're embarking on a really fascinating deep dive. We're going on a journey that takes us from, believe it or not, a 17th century lab all the way to the modern operating room. You know, the one with all the beeps and screens. Our theme, it's how physics, which sometimes feels a bit, you know, abstract, has massively shaped the art and the science of anesthesia.
It really has.
Yeah, and this isn't going to be some dry history lecture. It's more a story, really, about people, experiments, and these huge clinical shifts that save lives. It's about seeing the unseen forces behind patient care.
That's a great way to put it. It's actually pretty amazing when you think about how these basic principles, some worked out centuries ago, are still directly impacting patient safety, patient comfort in every single procedure we do today.
Right.
Physics is sort of the invisible guide, isn't it?
Yeah.
Behind, well, every big decision, every breath we support, every signal on the monitor. Oh. So our mission today in this deep dive is basically to follow that thread, to see how physics, step by step, helped anesthesiologists turn anesthesia from, frankly, trial and error.
Yeah, pretty scary trial and error sometimes.
Exactly, into the precise life-saving science it is now.
Okay, let's unpack this. So let's start way back. We're talking the 1600s, long before modern medicine as we know it. Picture Robert Boyle. He's not in some fancy lab.
No, not a
bit. He's got like a glass J-tube, some mercury, and just a trapped bit of air. That's it. No anesthesia machines, no O2 cylinders.
They're pretty humbling, isn't it? Such basic tools. And Boyle's big experiment, it sounds almost too simple. He just used weights to press down on the mercury.
Right.
And as he added more weight, more pressure, he just watched that little air bubble inside the tube get smaller.
Uh-huh.
And from that, just watching that, he figured out this fundamental thing back in 1662. Pressure and volume of a gas, they go in opposite directions, inversely proportional. And that, of course, became Boyle's law.
It's so elegant. You can picture it, right? Like squeezing a balloon, smaller space, higher pressure.
Hmm.
But for us in anesthesia, this isn't just, you know, physics 101. It's like the absolute foundation for how we store and use gases safely.
Exactly. That exact law, figured out almost 400 years ago, it's what governs every single oxygen cylinder in the OR today. Seriously.
Wow.
When you crack open a cylinder and hear that hiss, you know, the compressed gas rushing out.
Yeah.
You are literally watching Boyle's experiment happen again right there. It's not an exaggeration. Boyle's law is the first thing an anesthesiologist uses before they even start the anesthetic, just checking the tank.
That's incredible.
It really is. To think Boyle, with his J-tube and mercury, basically wrote the first chapter of modern anesthesia without even knowing it.
Amazing. Okay, so from Boyle, let's jump forward a bit. Early 1800s. Science is really picking up steam. People are digging deeper into how gases work. And this brings us to John Dalton. Interesting guy. He was actually colorblind. They even called it Daltonism for a while.
Right. I remember that.
But he helped us see gas mixtures clearly. He suggested that in a mix of gases, each gas basically acts like it's on its own. It exerts its own pressure, independent of the others. That's Dalton's law of partial pressures from 1801.
And that idea is absolutely critical for what we do every day. Think of it like an orchestra, maybe.
Okay.
Each instrument plays its part, adds its sound, right? Together, they make the music, but each sound is still separate.
Gotcha.
That's how gases work to the anesthesia machine. Dalton's law is why, say, if you set your FIOE or your inspired oxygen to 0.5, you know you're delivering half the atmospheric pressure as oxygen. Doesn't matter whether there's nitrous oxide or anything else in there. Oxygen's pressure is its own.
Yeah, that makes sense. And then just a couple of years later, 1803, William Henry comes along with another piece of the puzzle.
Right, Henry's law.
Yeah, he found that the amount of gas that dissolves in a liquid is directly related to the pressure of that gas above the liquid. The classic example is a soda bottle, isn't it?
Perfect example. All that fizzy CO2 is packed in under pressure. Pop the top, pressure drops.
And whoosh, out come the bubbles.
Exactly. And clinically, we see this play out. Something called diffusion hypoxia.
Yes. After stopping nitrous.
Precisely. When you turn off the nitrous, its partial pressure in the blood is suddenly way higher than in the lungs. So it rushes out of the blood into the alveoli, pushes the oxygen aside, basically dilutes it.
Causing oxygen levels to drop.
Temporarily, yes, but significantly. That's Henry's law happening right inside the patient's lungs. So Dalton and Henry, together, they really shifted things. Anesthesia went from just soaking a cloth in ether and hoping for the best.
Ah, bit hit miss.
To something predictable, a science of gas exchange. It really makes you stop and think, doesn't it? How many lives were probably saved just by applying these simple gas laws?
It really is humbling, these fundamental building blocks. And then, you know, society itself starts changing. The Industrial Revolution kicks in.
Big changes.
And that's when we see physics starting to shape the tools we use, the actual equipment.
Absolutely. This period was huge for anesthesia tech. Suddenly, we get strong metal alloys. Why? So we can safely store gases under really high pressure in cylinders, the ones we still use.
Right, the tanks.
Then flowmeters. They cleverly use fluid dynamics physics again to let us measure oxygen and nitrous oxide flows accurately.
Crucial for dosing.
Hugely.
Okay.
And maybe the biggest leap, vaporizers. They figured out how to use the physics of vapor pressure, heat transfer, all that to reliably turn liquid anesthetics into gases we could control.
Because before that, I mean, I've read early vaporizer attempts were pretty dangerous.
Oh, incredibly dangerous. Those early chloroform vaporizers from the 1840s, they were crude. You got wildly different doses. Overdoses were tragically common.
Wow.
Anesthesia was just a gamble back then, every single time. It was only when physics started guiding how vaporizers were designed, making them calibrated, that inhalation anesthesia even started to become safe.
So that's the real turning point.
I think so. That's the aha moment. Before calibrated vaporizers, it was risky. After physics got involved, it became science. It's fascinating how engineering and physics work together to take this really dangerous practice and make it a controlled medical procedure.
Okay, so moving into the 20th century, physics starts revolutionizing how we monitor patients, how we help them breathe. Capnography pops up in the 1940s. How did physics make that possible?
Well, engineers figured out something neat about CO2. Carbon dioxide absorbs infrared light at a very specific wavelength.
Okay.
So they designed a machine to shoot a little beam of infrared light through the patient's exhaled breath. By measuring how much light got absorbed, they could tell exactly how much CO2 was there continuously.
And that was huge clinically, right?
Oh, massive.
Yeah.
Instantly, you could confirm the breathing tube was in the right place. You could spot hypoventilation really early. You could even get clues about the patient's metabolism.
Yeah.
Real time, potentially life-saving information right there.
And then, around the same sort of era, the polio epidemics happened. A terrible time, but it spurred innovation, didn't it? Leading to ventilators.
It did. Doctors and engineers applied the physics of pressure, flow, lung compliance, how stretchy the lungs are, to build machines that could breathe for patients. First, negative pressure, like the iron lung, then positive pressure ventilators.
Which meant longer surgeries were possible.
Exactly. Anesthesia wasn't limited anymore by someone having to stand there squeezing a bag for hours. Patients could undergo much longer, more complex operations safely because breathing was handled. But all this new tech, especially electrocautery for surgery and all the monitors.
For our new risks.
New invisible risks, electrical risks. Suddenly understanding alternating versus direct current, how to prevent tiny leakage currents, how to properly isolate circuits that became absolutely critical for safety.
Right, the whole macro shock versus micro shock thing. Can you explain that quickly?
Sure. Think of electricity like water in pipes. Macro shock is like a big pipe bursting a large current flowing across the body.
Mm.
Obvious danger. Micro shock is sneakier. It's like a tiny pinhole leak in a pipe. But that leak is directed straight at a very vulnerable spot, like the heart muscle, especially if there's a pacemaker wire or a central line nearby.
So even a tiny current can be lethal.
Yes, if it hits the right spot.
Yeah.
So physics-based safety features in the equipment, strict protocols, they became essential. By the middle of the 20th century, you see, physics wasn't just about delivering the anesthetic.
It was about protecting the patient from the technology itself.
Precisely. A really important shift in focus. Protecting the patient became paramount, using physics principles.
Okay, so fast forward again, late 20th century, physics meets neurophysiology, and we get a couple of revolutionary safety tools.
Two game changers, definitely.
First one, 1970s, 80s pulse oximetry. Mm-hmm. Tell us about Taku Aoyagi and how he used light.
Aoyagi was a bioengineer in Japan. Mm-hmm. He had this brilliant idea using spectrophotometry. Basically, he realized that hemoglobin carrying oxygen absorbs red and infrared light differently than hemoglobin without oxygen.
Like shining a light through stained glass.
That's a great analogy. The color and brightness of the light coming through tells you what's inside. His device measured how much red versus infrared light got through, say, a fingertip, and calculated the oxygen saturation from that difference.
And it wasn't an immediate hit?
No, amazingly, it was initially kind of dismissed. Took a while for people to realize just how powerful it was. But eventually, it was recognized as one of the single biggest leaps in patient safety ever.
Why was it so revolutionary?
Because you could detect hypoxemia, low oxygen, before the patient started turning blue, before cyanosis. You had minutes of warning you never had before. It absolutely changed safety standards worldwide.
Incredible. And then the 90s brought BIS monitoring, bispectral index.
Mm-hmm.
This took physics right into the brain, didn't it? Using fancy math on EEG signal.
Yeah, really sophisticated stuff. Engineers applied things like Fourier transforms and bispectral analysis, complex mathematical ways to analyze wave patterns to the raw EEG, the brain waves.
Which look pretty chaotic usually.
They do. But these techniques can pull out subtle patterns and relationships hidden in that chaos. Patterns that correlate with how deeply unconscious someone is.
And turn it into just a number.
Basically, yeah. They filter out the noise, find the underlying structure, and convert it into a single number, usually between 0 and 100. That gives you a quantitative measure of hypnotic depth.
And the aha moment there.
Well, before BIS, intraoperative awareness patients actually being awake during surgery was, sadly, more common than we liked. It was a huge fear.
Understandably.
With BIS, anesthesiologists could fine-tune the anesthetic dose much more precisely, keep the patient safely asleep, but avoid giving too much, which can slow down recovery. It was about finding that sweet spot. It's just fascinating, isn't it? Physics starts with Boyle looking at gas in a tube.
In the lungs, essentially.
And now it's giving us insights directly into the brain's electrical activity. Lungs to brain. That's quite a journey.
It really is, and it doesn't stop. Now, 21st century, physics is still pushing frontiers. Quantum, digital, what are we seeing now?
Well, things like NIRS, near-infrared spectroscopy. It's kind of like pulse oximetry, but it looks deeper, measures oxygen levels in brain tissue itself by seeing how light scatters.
And ultrasound, that's huge now.
Oh, absolutely. Using piezoelectric crystals physics again, turning electricity into sound waves and back.
Yeah.
It lets us literally see nerves in real time for nerve blocks.
Making them way more accurate and safe.
Definitely. And safer vascular access, too. Plus, understanding MRI physics is crucial for safety around those powerful magnets.
Yeah.
And now, AI.
AI is everywhere.
It is. We're seeing machine learning ventilators that use physics models of gas flow, compliance, oxygen uptake to constantly adjust settings for the individual patient. It's getting incredibly precise.
So Boyle helped us store the oxygen.
Right. And now physics is helping us figure out how to optimize its delivery right down to the cellular level. People are even looking at nanotechnology, quantum sensors. It just keeps evolving, getting more and more granular, more precise.
It's an incredible story. So what does this all mean for you listening when you step back and look at this whole journey?
Mm.
From Robert Boyle in his simple glass tube to Dalton seeing gases like singers in a choir, Henry's soda bottle fizzing, Ayagi shining that light through a finger, each step, driven by physics, totally reshaped how we care for patients.
Absolutely.
Physics isn't just some old textbook thing. It's alive. It's right now. It's in the hiss of that oxygen tank, the waveform glowing on the monitor, the beep of the pulse oximeter.
Everywhere in the OR.
Yeah. So when you think about it, anesthesiologists, we're not just doctors. We're kind of applied physicists right there at the bedside, using these amazing principles every minute to keep people safe.
That's a perfect way to frame it. And, you know, tracing this incredible journey from basic gas laws to looking inside the brain, it really raises an important question, doesn't it?
What's that?
What are the next frontiers? What hidden quantum principles, what digital tools are being explored right now that will completely redefine anesthesia again? Things that might make even today's tech look, well, primitive in a few decades. What deeper levels of human physiology could physics help us unlock next to make things even safer, even better? It makes you wonder what's just around the corner.
Thanks for joining us on today's episode of Optimal Anesthesia. For in-depth notes, visuals, and bonus content, head over to optimalanesthesia.com. And if you're looking for exclusive podcasts, early releases, and deeper clinical insights, you'll find all that at patreon.com/optimalanesthesia by Rennie. Support the learning, support the craft. See you in the next one.